Manila files yet another diplomatic protest against Beijing over the latest incident involving a Chinese ship in disputed waters. President Duterte orders law enforcement agencies to submit their report on the bloody drug war to the International Criminal Court. Two Filipinos badly beaten in New York in the latest crimes against people of color in the U.S. We're going to speak to Philippine Consul General Elmer Cato about these incidents later on in the program. And progress in the Ukraine-Russia talks as both sides move closer to a possible meeting between their leaders. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Our top story at this hour, the Philippines files a fresh diplomatic protest against China following the latest incident at the Scarborough Shoal. A Philippine Coast Guard ship had a close encounter with a Chinese vessel in the disputed waters last March 2nd. The Chinese Foreign Ministry earlier asserted the shoal is part of China's territory and that Manila must respect Beijing's sovereignty. National Security Advisor Hermogenes Esperon says the Philippine government will continue to seek a diplomatic solution to China's aggression in the West Philippine Sea. A maritime law expert lauds Manila's immediate action to protest the harassment.
I do not see any way to justify the China Coast Guard's action, no, of cutting across the bow of the PCG vessel, even from a Chinese position or perspective, and even if the law were on their side, the law would still not have allowed that kind of dangerous maneuver, no, given the circumstances. We also know that they've done it to other countries, the vessels of other countries. What we're seeing here is the habit, really, of the China Coast Guard of engaging in these dangerous maneuvers to try to elbow out everyone else from the areas that they claim.
President Rodrigo Duterte orders the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency and other law enforcement agencies to submit a report to the International Criminal Court. This as the chief executive is again justifying the high casualty count in government's campaign against illegal drugs. The thousands of alleged extrajudicial killings prompted the ICC to launch a probe over the administration's possible crimes against humanity. The investigation, however, was temporarily suspended after the government requested its deferment.
Ibigay tapos ibigay ninyo ang kopya ng ilang toneladang shabu araw-araw na dumadagsa sa Pilipinas. And let them ponder on the number of Filipino younger generation itong mga ecstasy, itong yung mga tawag nila na mga cocktail, para nila kung gaano talaga kabigat in spite or despite of our talagang double time na ano, marami pa rin.
Malacanang calling for a sit-down with Amnesty International. That's after the rights group released another scathing report of unlawful killings under the Duterte administration. Among the concerns raised by AI, the alleged lack of accountability for government officials with human rights violations, for those that tag others as communists, and for what they're calling inadequate probes into the deaths related to those cases. The palace, however, is refuting this report. It calls the report a collection of recycled issues which have all been addressed. Amnesty International also lamented the continued strict lockdowns last year and the insufficient access to health care amid the pandemic. But acting presidential spokesperson Martin Andanar points out all regions of the Philippines are now at a minimal risk classification. Amnesty International, meanwhile, slams Malacanang's claim the report is just a rehashed version of previous ones. The organization's advocacy and mobilization manager, Will Norpapa, says they've been pointing out these issues ever since Duterte rose to power in 2016 because until now, government has yet to address them.
ang usual nga na response ng ating government whenever we raise issues like red tagging, freedom of expression, even yung mga masasabi nating bagong lumabas on the Philippine entry tulad ng workers' rights at COVID, ay palaging denial that these things are happening, that they're doing everything that they can to serve the people. Well, in fact, sa aming pag-aaral, sa aming research, sa aming pakikipag-usap sa mga biktima, even with government officials, ay kulang na kulang talaga yung mga pag-aksyon, kulang na kulang yung mga resulta na kailangan natin.
Two Filipinos are the latest victims in a string of violence against people of color in the U.S. A 73-year-old Filipino man was assaulted on Sunday by a homeless individual while he was on his way to church in Manhattan. Another Filipino, 53-year-old Melvin Dizon, was robbed and beaten unconscious Monday by another homeless individual at a McDonald's store in Midtown. These incidents come on the heels of a recent brutal attack against a 67-year-old Filipino woman in Yonkers, New York. The Philippine Consulate General in New York is condemning in the strongest terms the latest attacks on members of the Filipino community. We'll be speaking now with Consul General Elmer Cato. Consul General Cato, good afternoon from Manila. Nice to see you. Thanks for joining us today.
Carmina, good afternoon there in Manila. Kumusta?
Mabuti naman po. Kayo po?
We're okay.
That's good to know. All right. So I hope the Filipino, the latest victim of this incident, is also doing okay. How is he doing as we speak?
Well, there were two incidents, I know. The first one was on Sunday involving a 73-year-old retiree from Makati. And the second one was Mr. Melvin Dizon, which happened on Monday. We were able to get in touch with the first victim. We were able to call him this evening, and he said he's okay except for a swollen eye. He's been discharged from the hospital, but the second victim is still at the hospital, and we have requested to have access to him tomorrow.
All right. The investigation, though, at least into these two incidents, is it leading to a possible hate crime? Do you know enough now to say that it was indeed
a hate crime? We don't have enough details to make such a determination. Although the first victim was telling me that he heard the suspect hurling some verbal insults, but he is not sure if those were anti-Asian hate sentiments. The second victim, we're not sure as well. So right now we could not say that these are anti-Asian hate crimes. Mm-hmm.
I know that you are located in New York, but across the coast, in California, there are also reports of anti-Asian hate crimes. Do you know how the Filipino community there is doing as well? Because in Chinatown in San Francisco, for example, the targets seem to be Chinese proprietors there, owners of business establishments. Do you have any leads that Filipinos might also be victims of such incidents?
There have been incidents involving Filipinos in other parts of the United States as well, but not as pronounced as New York City, where we have recorded or monitored at least 34 cases since last year. Hate cases have always been there. There have been cases not just against Filipinos or Asians, but also against Blacks, against the LGBT community, the Jewish communities, and even the Latinos. Hate crimes against Asians experienced a surge after the outbreak of the coronavirus disease. And Filipinos are the third Asian ethnicity that have felt the brunt of this hate crimes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the trigger, because I know particularly your history. You've been your career as a diplomat spans decades. You spent a lot of time there in New York before your duty called you to be assigned to another place. But now that you're back in New York, is this the worst that you've ever seen it?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. We've seen an increase in hate crimes involving Filipinos, and it's the first time that we've been hearing our kababayan here saying that they're afraid to take the subway, they're afraid to go out of their homes at night. Many of them are taking Uber instead of taking subway trains, because it's in the subway where we've noted many of the incidents involving our kababayan, and most of the victims include elderly women and all. What we've been telling our kababayan is for them to tell us these incidents that have been taking place, because we feel that the 34 that we have listed so far does not indicate the real number. We think there are more cases, but most of these are unreported.
And why do you think that is so? Why do you think that it's underreported?
Well, for one, victims feel that they may be more vulnerable in case the suspects are released. They might open themselves to possible retaliatory actions. Two, we feel that a number of the incidents involve undocumented Filipinos. And if they report such incidents to police or even to the consulate, they have this misimpression that they might get deported. And third, we have Filipinos who tend to downplay racial insults. They think it's just okay. It would be a burden for them to go to the police station to report these incidents. So those are the three reasons why we think Asian hate crimes or incidents are underreported.
I mean, obviously, you're not taking this lightly. You have condemned this in the strongest possible terms. But have you been in touch with city authorities, and what have they told you as to how they will be addressing this matter?
We have expressed our position since the search was first noted last year. And we've been working with the rest of our community here in New York. And we've also reached out to authorities. And after one of our kababayan died as a result of an accident involving a homeless individual with a criminal record and with mental health issues, we met with the commissioner of the New York City Police Department, and we discussed our concerns. And we do understand that their hands are tied, that police authorities cannot just be everywhere. And most of these cases, if not all, are unprovoked, they're random, and we could not predict where and when this would happen. So we've been telling our kababayan to exercise extreme caution, especially when taking the subway or when outside their residences. Last night, we conducted the third of our webinars on self-defense, and we intend to go to live events where kababayan who feel they're vulnerable could take part in actual self-defense training sessions.
You know what concerns me here as well is the effect on the younger generation. Because they're now living in this kind of an environment. Is that something that you're looking into as well?
Well, these issues affect actually the elderly. Our younger generations are also affected. In fact, they are taking the lead in a rally that would be staged tomorrow here in New York. So for the first time, the Filipino community is coming out to denounce this incident. Not just these incidents involving our own kababayan, but also the rest of the Asian Pacific Islander community here in the United States.
And of course, the children, Consul General, who have access to news, who see that this is happening. Is there also some sort of a special way by which you're reaching out to them, telling them that despite everything, that you will be there and continue to make them safe, or that the community is going to keep them safe?
Well, the general advisory that we've been issuing to the community is that the consulate is always here. In fact, when we called our kababayan who was injured in the Sunday incident, he was appreciative of us checking on him. He didn't expect that. And in the past year, we've been doing that. We've been constantly assuring our community that we should work together. We've been asking them to report. And we've been constantly reminding them to take the necessary actions to make sure that they'll be safe. We've been sounding like a broken record, though. We've been issuing these advisories lately on a daily basis, almost daily basis.
That says a lot about the sign of the times, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, the problem here is actually involves mostly homeless individuals, some of them with criminal records and mental health issues. So our requests to authorities is for them to do more to remove these dangerous individuals from the streets and make the city safe again for all of us here.
You mentioned a while ago that this is also happening in many other states, but the incidences are high there in the city of New York. What other states are you looking at here? What are the areas of concern do you have?
Well, my jurisdiction only covers 10 states in the northeast of the United States, but we've monitored incidents taking place in California. Those are the two areas where we've seen some cases, but most likely, as I've been telling you, those cases are underreported.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to have to leave it at that. We appreciate you taking time to talk to us very late there in New York. Thanks again, Consul General Elmer Cato, the Philippine Consulate General in New York. Thank you. Again, take care.
Thank you.
Keep safe. Russia and Ukraine making their most significant progress yet in the peace talks as both sides offered proposals that could lead to a meeting between their leaders. Let's get more details in this report.
Ukraine negotiators say they offered to adopt a neutral status in exchange for security guarantees on Tuesday, a step that marked the most significant progress in talks to date. The proposal followed the first face-to-face meetings with Russia in nearly 3 weeks. Ukraine says it would not join military alliances or host military bases, but proposed its security would be guaranteed by similar terms to NATO's Article 5 Collective Defense Clause. Kyiv identified Israel and NATO members Canada, Poland and Turkey as countries that could help provide such guarantees. The Ukraine proposals also include a 15-year consultation period on the status of annexed Crimea, but they could only come into force following a complete ceasefire. Ukrainian negotiator David Arachamia.
In order for this agreement to be valid and for all sides to agree on it, there has to be full peace on Ukraine's territory. No foreign troops. All have to leave. Our proposition has not been accepted by Russia yet. We are just handing it over to the Russian side today. We are saying, this is our position. We are giving you our official position. And then we will wait for their answer.
Ukrainian television reported the face-to-face talks in Istanbul began with a cold welcome. But their resumption is seen as an important step towards a ceasefire. Ukrainian negotiators believe the new proposals are sufficient to warrant a meeting between Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Russia is yet to respond to that. But Moscow did confirm it would drastically cut its military activity around Kyiv and Chernihiv to create the conditions for dialogue. All that came just hours after a Russian rocket hit the regional administration building in Mykolaiv earlier on Tuesday, killing at least 3 people and wounding others, according to the local authorities. Video showed a large hole in the side of a building. Mykolaiv is among the southern port cities standing in the way of Russia establishing a land corridor to Crimea. Heavily bombed Mariupol shares that fate.
We had a beautiful life, just beautiful. Now we have nothing, just nothing.
Russia calls its actions in Ukraine a special operation that it says is not designed to occupy territory, but to destroy its southern neighbor's military capabilities and capture what it regards as dangerous nationalists. The West says Russia launched an unprovoked war.
Ukraine is skeptical about Russia's promise to scale down military operations around Kyiv. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says his people are not naive and that they have learned to only trust concrete results. Russia's one-month-old invasion has been halted on most fronts by stiff Ukrainian resistance. who have recaptured some territories. The Pentagon has also confirmed Russia has started moving a small number of troops away from Kyiv, but it says this is more of a repositioning than a retreat. The U.S. warns the threat to Kyiv is not yet over. The war has sparked volunteerism among Ukrainians who chose to stay home. Take a look.
In the besieged Ukrainian city of Kharkiv, so far one of the hardest hit by Russia's invasion of the country, volunteers Maxim and Sergei are helping residents survive by distributing humanitarian aid. Walking through the eastern neighborhood of Kharazont, they hand out food and medicine to those who remain.
People lost their homes, their flats. Many were hit by bombs, by rockets. There is almost no life in the district.
We are here to make sure that not a single person is hungry or dies of starvation. That would be horrible. Apart from this, we help with medicine as much as we can, whatever we can order. Plus, we help the elderly and the bedridden. We deliver personal hygiene products. There are quite a few children and babies in the district. We deliver baby food for them.
Grassroots and self-funded charities have delivered food, medicine and personal hygiene products to residents who are unable to get humanitarian aid because of old age, disability or their neighbourhood being under regular shelling. Vitaly is one of Kharkiv's residents reliant on the help of volunteers.
I used to help blind people. I organised cultural trips to Kyiv, to theatres, so that people who are blind could widen their knowledge. Now I'm very grateful for Sergei and his team's help. They help us, the disabled, a lot. They bring whatever you ask for. They bring water.
The United States forging ahead on its growing Asia-Pacific priorities despite the crisis sparked by Russia's invasion on Ukraine. In a meeting with Singapore's Prime Minister at the White House, U.S. President Joe Biden said his administration remains committed to its Indo-Pacific strategy. Under the policy, the U.S. vows to commit more diplomatic and security resources to counter what it sees as China's bid to create a regional sphere of influence.
Matter of fact, things are growing important, and a rule-based order is facing unprecedented challenges. Russia's unprovoked and unjustifiable war against Ukraine is an urgent threat to both Europe and, I believe, to the Indo-Pacific as well. And it's attacking the core tenets of a rule-based international order. Borders can't be changed by force, and all the nations, large and small, are equal and sovereign in the right to their sovereignty.
Singapore hopes that the United States, amid all its many preoccupations, will continue to deepen its relationship with countries in the Asia-Pacific, China certainly, but also other countries besides China, and deepen it substantially in many different ways through the Indo-Pacific strategy, and in doing so, to foster the peace, stability, and security of the world, as you have done for so many decades since the war.
Biden had been due to host leaders of the 10-nation Association of Southeast Asian Nations this week, but the summit was postponed because not all leaders could be in attendance. I'm going to take a break now. Up ahead, the spokesperson of government's anti-communist task force faces yet another complaint for her serial red tagging. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we are back. Our silly Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Manila files yet another diplomatic protest against Beijing over the latest incident involving a Chinese ship in disputed waters. President Duterte orders law enforcement agencies to submit the report on the bloody drug war to the International Criminal Court. Two Filipinos badly beaten in New York in the latest crimes against people of color in the U.S. The Philippine Consul General in New York condemns the incident. He adds more evidence is needed to determine if these were hate crimes. And progress in the Ukraine-Russia talks as both sides move closer to a possible meeting between their leaders. Presidential candidate Vice President Lenny Robredo is now in southern Leyte. Our correspondent Adrian Ayala now joins us with more on that. Adrian, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. We are here in a seaside community here in the town of Sogod in southern Leyte. You might be hearing someone singing in the background. There's a pre-program before the dialogue of VP Lenny and Senator Kiko Pangilinan with fisher folk in this barangay, Barangay San Jose. This barangay was affected by Typhoon Odette last year, and most of the houses were washed out, and of course, the bankas, the boats of the fishermen were also affected by the typhoon last year. This was the beneficiary, or the fisher folk here were the beneficiaries of financial assistance from the Office of the Vice President, particularly the Angat Buhay program of the OVP. The fishermen were given financial assistance for them to procure their own boats and other fishing equipment. That's just one of the receipts, recibo, which VP Lenny has been saying in her speeches as she goes around the country. This today, this will be the last event of VP Lenny in her 3-day campaign here in Eastern Visayas region. She has been to practically all provinces of Region 8. From Northern Samar, Samar, Eastern Samar, Biliran, Leyte yesterday, and now here in Southern Leyte. Just this morning, VP Lenny also attended a people's rally, a volunteer-led people's rally here in Southern Leyte, and like in the Samar provinces, wherein a lot of local officials are coming out and openly supporting VP Lenny here. We are hardly seeing any local official, although VP Lenny has a courtesy call with the mayor of Sogod before she proceeds to the dialogue here in Barangay San Jose. And that's the latest from Southern Leyte. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Adrian. Take care. Keep safe. Back in the newsroom, Presidential Bet Center Manny Pacquiao is campaigning, this time in Iloilo. Our very own Sherian Torres now joins us with an update. Chat, over to you.
Yes, Carmina, from the Standard Bearer Center, Manny Pacquiao's activities here in Iloilo City. We're supposed to start at around 11 in the morning today. But the senator, who will be arriving from Manila with his wife, Jinky, has yet to kick off his campaign shortest as of this hour. Pacquiao's first activity is a short visit to a Christian group and a fellowship to be followed by a media briefing. And in the afternoon, an audience with the Baptist Church community and a fellowship with Iloilo local officials tonight. Jinky Pacquiao will also have an audience with the pastor's wife. Pacquiao will be staying here in Iloilo City, Carmina, for 2 days to woo its more than 330,000 voters and the whole Iloilo province, which contributes more than 1.6 million registered voters for this year's election. Iloilo is part of Region 6 or Western Visayas, which political observers also see as a quote-unquote opposition country, as shown by its local officials' strong show of support with the candidacy of Vice President Lenny Robredo and her running mate Senator Francis Pangilinan. During the 2016 election, Carmina, Iloilo voters supported the candidacy of then-administration presidential Jack Marrojas and his running mate Lenny Robredo, with more than 662,000 and 700 during the presidential race, while former Senator Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. only got more than 162,000 votes in the VP race. Region 6 has more than 5 million voters. And aside from Iloilo kanina, Pacquiao is also set to barnstorm the cities of Bacolod and the Baguete this week. And aside from the religious leaders, there are no local officials with them who are set to endorse Pacquiao here in this area. Back to you, Cardina.
Thanks a lot. Sherian Torres there. Take care, Sher. Keep safe. Well, the spokesperson of the Philippine government's anti-communist task force faces yet another complaint before the ombudsman for her serial red-tagging of election candidates and opposition groups. The complainants include Kilusang Magbubukid ng Pilipinas and Fishermen's Group Pamalakaya. They say they will not be silenced by Undersecretary Lorraine Badoy's baseless accusations. Badoy has been accusing the groups of being terrorists without any evidence to back the claim. Despite mounting complaints, President Duterte still vouches for Badoy as he links party list groups belonging to the Makabayan bloc to the communist movement.
Nakapasok sila sa Congress. No doubt about it. They have used the party list. In particular, sabihin ko sa inyo na tama si Lorraine Badoy na itong mga party list na kabataan, anak pawis, bayan muna, Alliance of Concerned Teachers or ACT at Gabriela. Makita naman ninyo sa behavior nila and the way they espouse their advocacy for a party left ang talagang drift nila. Or they are really parang legal fronts ng Communist Party of the Philippines.
Bayan Muna Representative Carlos Zarate condemns the Duterte administration's repeated red tagging. Zarate reiterates being progressive does not mean they are legal fronts of the underground communist movement. He believes Duterte's attacks against their bloc is an election ploy.
Clearly a partisan political ploy coming ex cathedra, no, from Malacañang itself, no, and despite the so-called neutral stand of Duterte of not endorsing yet a candidate, it's very clear, no, his candidate is the son of the former dictator, the Marcos Jr., and they want to destroy this early the opposition, the broad opposition that is now coming together, no, to oppose the continuation of the Duterte governance as well as the coming back of the Marcos dictator style of governance.
The Makabayan bloc has expressed their support for the presidential bid of Vice President Robredo and her running mate Senator Kiko Pangilinan, who is going against Duterte's daughter, Sara. President Duterte also criticized the country's elite for using the party list system to get them elected to the House of Representatives. He also vowed to spend the remaining days of his life criticizing the system.
Until the end of my, the end of the day, on my last day, I would continue to criticize and say something about itong mga party list at hindi lang and left. Ito ay ginagamit ng mga mayaman, lahat ng mga may negosyante. Either binili nila yung party list o nag-create sila because they can do it with the money. And that has become a problem na sa fractured na tayo. It's a fractured constitution. Pero who allowed this itong ganitong party list?
President Duterte justifies his reason for allowing e-sabong or online cockfighting to continue. That's despite calls to suspend its operations following the disappearance of dozens of bettors. Duterte says government needs the money generated by e-sabong.
Ako, baka nagdududa kayo bakit hindi ko hininto. Hindi ko hininto kasi kailangan ng pera sa isabong ng gobyerno. I make it public now. It's 640 million a month. And in a year's time, it's billion plus. Saan tayo maghanap ng pera ng gano'n na kadali?
We're going to take another break. Still ahead, Philippine Transport Authority is opposed a fuel surcharge hike for airlines, even as oil prices continue to go up. This is Stateline Philippines here on ANC. Back with more news. Government is preparing emergency jobs and other forms of assistance to those affected by the recent eruption of Taal volcano. Our very own Pia Gutierrez now joins us with details. Pia, over to you.
Yes, Carmina, the Department of Labor and Employment will be providing emergency employment to individuals affected by the recent eruption of the Taal volcano. Labor Secretary Silvestre Bello III told President Duterte in a recorded meeting in Davao that over 3,600 affected residents in Batangas are eligible to receive 400 pesos, which is equivalent to the daily minimum wage in Region 4A, for a period of 10 days in exchange for government-mandated work as part of the immediate response of the agency. DOLE is also preparing to allocate up to 100 million pesos in government assistance in case more families become affected by developments in the Taal volcano. Meanwhile, the Department of Agriculture says it is ready to distribute 7 million pesos worth of assistance to affected farmers and fishermen in the form of bags of seeds and fish fingerlings. So far, there has been no reported damages on the agriculture and fishery sector due to volcanic activities. The Department of Trade and Industry, meanwhile, is also distributing livelihood kits to affected micro, small, and medium enterprises in Batangas, while the Department of Human Settlements and Urban Development says there are 1,123 available temporary shelter or housing units available for displaced families in case Alert Level 4 is hoisted in the area. Meanwhile, Carmina, President Rodrigo Duterte says he will be calling for a final cabinet meeting to formally bid goodbye to his officials before he steps down from office. During a recorded meeting in Davao, Duterte expressed his gratitude to the members of his cabinet, saying that working with them had been exhilarating. The president earlier said that he's already making preparations to move out of Malacañang months before the national elections to make the transition easier for him and his successor. Duterte is not running for any public office in the 2022 national polls after withdrawing from the senatorial race last year. He is planning to go back to his hometown, Davao City, after his term officially ends on June 30, 2022. And that's the latest from Malacañang, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Pia Gutierrez. Take care and keep safe. U.S. regulators approve a second booster shot for Americans aged 50 and above, citing data showing the waning immunity and the risks posed by the subvariants of Omicron. Details in this report.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Tuesday authorized a second COVID-19 booster dose for adults aged 50 and older, amid concerns about the highly contagious and newly predominant BA2 Omicron variant, which has driven new spikes in cases in other countries. The agency said the new boosters, a fourth round of shots of the Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna vaccines, should be administered at least 4 months after the previous dose. Dr. Peter Hotez, professor of pediatrics and molecular virology at Baylor College of Medicine, says another booster could be critical for protection.
We have data now from the Centers for Disease Control showing that after a few months out of your first booster, you have a decline in effectiveness to around 66% protection against emergency room visits, 78% versus hospitalizations. In addition to that, we have data coming out of Israel now saying that if you get that second booster, the fourth dose, it tends to restore it to that previous effectiveness.
Scientists and officials have debated for months if and when an additional booster shot would be needed, as they parsed data on how long protection from the vaccines and boosters would last. COVID cases in the United States have dropped sharply since a record surge in January, but have seen a small uptick over the past week, according to data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The U.S. National Public Health Agency said on Tuesday that the BA.2 subvariant of Omicron was estimated to account for more than half the coronavirus variants in the country. A resurgence of COVID-19 cases in parts of Asia and Europe has raised concerns that another wave could follow in the United States. But the country's health experts believe it is unlikely. A top official said on Tuesday that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration will weigh the benefits of authorizing another round of boosters of either the Pfizer-BioNTech or Moderna COVID-19 vaccine to a broader population in the fall.
Here at home, Presidential Advisor for Entrepreneurship Joey Concepcion urges Filipinos to get their booster shots immediately. He says a lot of vaccines are expiring by June and July, and there are no new orders yet since a new administration will be taking over. He adds plans to further ease COVID restrictions may be derailed due to the low booster uptake in the Philippines.
We would qualify to really remove the alert because there's no impending threat right now in the country. But as I was saying, my biggest concern really right now is our booster shots. I was proposing that maybe we can set a deadline. Everybody should take their booster shots before June, or else you can implement that entry to business establishments such as restaurants will be restricted to those who have not taken yet the booster shots by June. So you give them a lead time.
The Health Department earlier said only 11.8 million Filipinos have received their booster shots out of the 45 million eligible population. China's renewed COVID lockdowns are seen to cost the country at least $46 billion per month. But that's just the minimum estimate, according to a study by economists at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. They say this could double if more cities tighten their restrictions. A strict lockdown in Shanghai alone could reduce China's real GDP by 4%. A worst-case scenario would be a lockdown in all cities for 1 month, which could cut China's GDP by 53% over that period. China has been fighting a wave of the more infectious Omicron variant, with daily COVID cases rising to above 6,000. Filipinos living in Shanghai are also affected by the ongoing lockdown there. Ryman Manangit says their community is subjected to swab testing twice a day while under lockdown. Mobility is restricted and residents must present a proof of negative COVID test result before being allowed into groceries and markets. Manangit also said there was panic buying in supermarkets. That's why some shelves are left empty.
Halos lahat ng online na magbibili, sirado yung mga tindahan kasi walang mga deliveries. Hirap sa amin kasi Pilipino kami, tapos hindi kami marunong sa mga pasikot-sikot sa mga deliveries.
Another Filipino in Shanghai, Ravina Shang, also shared her experience under strict lockdown orders.
Actually po, nag-lockdown na po kami sa aming community ngayon kasi po may isang building na may na-positive. Isa lang po, isang tao lang po yung na-positive. After that, nag-declare na po sila na lockdown sa community po namin.
In other news, the Metro Manila Development Authority unveils some proposals to ease the traffic congestion in Metro Manila. Among them, a four-day work week, as well as a daylight savings time system wherein government offices in Metro Manila operate from 7 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. The MMDA's general manager, Romando Artes, also presented an odd-even scheme for motorists.
Nagmarka po ay ang agreement ng bawat isa na sobra po ang dami ng sasakyan dito sa Kamaynilaan at kailangan po talaga i-reduce, Mr. President. Last year alone, Mr. President, 300,000 vehicles po ang nabenta at 60 to 73% po niyan ay pumapasok sa NCR.
The Philippine Transportation Department standing by its move not to approve any fare adjustments or fuel surcharge hike for airlines despite high oil prices. Jackie Manabat reports.
The aviation industry is still reeling from the impacts of the pandemic. They put out promo fares to encourage the passengers to book flights. Passengers have started doing so for the summer. But they're facing another challenge, the global problem on high price of crude oil. Current fuel surcharge is based on the two-month average of Min of Platts Singapore or MOPS jet fuel from December 2021 to January 2022. This covers prices until next month or April. The price of crude oil has since increased by over $100 per barrel since start of the year. The Civil Aeronautics Board held a meeting on Monday to hear a local airline's appeal to adjust the fuel surcharge, but no resolution was reached. But according to Transportation Secretary Art Tugade, there will be no fuel surcharge adjustments for now.
Wala munang increasean. Kaya yung fuel surcharge, oho, sinisipat at sinisilip yan. Nabanggit sa akin yan. Ang knee-jerk reaction ko is, pag-aralang mabuti yan, pagkat, pag nag-fuel surcharge ka, kaibigan, sino ang bibit-bit ng gastusin na yun? Yung pasahero.
Philippine Airlines earlier said it wants to ask for a review of the fuel surcharge.
We're actually asking the help of CAB for our fuel surcharge, but of course, it should be still reasonably priced for the consumers to actually not reasonable for them to fly.
Cebu Pacific says it's not yet time to ask for a fuel surcharge.
We think traveling is a habit. So our initial objective is to get people back on planes, get used to flying again. Thus, we're intentionally keeping our fares very attractive and competitive in order to stimulate traffic. No? It's more important for us that people get back into the habit of traveling.
Meanwhile, AirAsia Philippines says they have not been charging the passengers the fuel surcharge for years.
As a matter of fact, there were times na hindi po kami nag-implement ng fuel surcharge. For example, noong 2015, no? Wala po tayong fuel surcharge dan. Tumaas, pero hindi po naningil ang AirAsia Philippines.
Fuel surcharge could be seen on the breakdown of the air ticket. Airlines could decide whether to collect a lower surcharge than the published rates or none at all for a competitive advantage. Jackie Manabat, ABS-CBN News.
Despite its dovish stance, Fitch Solutions sees the Philippine Central Bank raising interest rates this year to contain inflation. Fitch says the BSP may hike rates by 75 basis points to 2.75% due to the combination of inflationary pressures, continued economic recovery, and major central banks ending their pandemic-era easy monetary policy. The BSP has kept interest rates at a record low of 2% since November 2020 to help the Philippine economy weather the impact of the pandemic. Fitch Solutions also raised its 2022 inflation forecast for the Philippines to 4.5%, above government's target range of 2 to 4% due to soaring global oil prices. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.